This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
So we're back for another segment of Shit Neil Says Weird. This week, it's cashew. Neil pronounced it as, was it? Cashew.
It is cashew.
I've only ever heard it as cashew.
It's cashew.
Well, lads, if any of yous pronounce it like that, let me know. But
it's cashew. The only thing what upset me deeply about it was the reason why I call it cashew is because my dad always called it cashew. My mum always called it cashew. Everyone I knew called it cashew. And I phoned my dad and I said, here.
No, you didn't phone him. It was when we were at the boxing.
Sorry. It was at the boxing. And I went, here, sort her out. She keeps taking piss out of me for saying cashew. She says it's cashew. And he went, yeah, it's either or.
Yeah, well, people pronounce differently, he said. Yeah, and I was like, you were like, hold the fuck
up. Yeah,
on.
I was like, you've never called it that in your fucking life.
Now, I don't know. Maybe some people do pronounce it cashew, but I've only ever heard cashew.
It's cashew.
Again, my issue here...
Don't you think, right, for our listeners listening to this, listen how easy I say it, cashew. Now you say it.
Cashew.
Sounds so much more effort has to go into it the way you say it.
I once had a friend who, she never said horse. She only ever said hearse. And when we all, like all me and my other friends called her on it, we're like, why the fuck are you saying that? She was like, saying horse is too much work. So I just say hearse. And we're like, they're different fucking, you can't do that. That's not how the language works.
Well, I can beat that. I say oss.
I'm painfully aware of that. But again, same thing with the tongue and tongue. I don't have an issue with it. It's the fact that you correct other people. You ignorant bastard.
Hi, I'm Hannah.
And I'm Jess. We're the hosts of the Wicked Wanderings podcast.
Join us every Wednesday as we explore the mysteries of true crime,
the paranormal,
and all things creepy.
We'll take you on a journey through well-known cases
and stories off the beaten path that are sure to leave an impression.
So stay curious,
keep exploring,
and always remember to keep on wandering.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So today, Neil, we are going to cover the case of William Suff.
Is that a nickname?
No, that's his name.
Suff.
He was also known as the Riverside Killer.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. I didn't really know much about this case. Actually, I'm not sure if I was familiar at all. I'd maybe heard of the Riverside Killer. But it's not the most well-known case.
Definitely sounds... Riverside Killer... William Suff doesn't sound familiar at all.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised because, I mean, this is a serial killer. We'll get into why it's not as well-known as others. But yeah, with that being said... there's not a lot on him, you know? So I usually like to start the case with jumping into the background of the killer. But as I don't have a lot of information, I thought this episode we'll start with each of the victims and then we'll loop back around and learn a bit about him.
Okay.
Sound good? I just want to make a note and apologize if any of the info is slightly off. As I said, this was not the most publicized case, and some of the sources were stating, you know, different dates, ages, things like that.
Yeah.
I tried my best. So, on the 28th of June, 1989, the body of Kimberly Little was found on the side of a road in Lake Elsinore, and her body had been covered in a towel. She was 28 years old, and her cause of death was strangulation. There was also trauma to the head, as well as cigarette burns to various areas of her body. The autopsy revealed that these injuries were inflicted before death. Now, remember the towel?
Yeah.
Because fibres found on that towel would help link these murders together later on.
Is this where I might have seen something about it before then? Because that sounds like something that would be on Forensic Files.
Possibly, yeah.
Where the found fibres, yeah.
13th of December 1989. Christina Leal. Her body was found left on a hillside in Manifee. She was 23 years old and her cause of death was strangulation and stabbing. Markings found on her wrists and ankles indicated the use of ligatures. She was found fully dressed and she had been stabbed directly into the heart. Tire tracks were found at the scene, again remembered for later.
Oh, so they took the clay mould?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there's one last thing about this particular murder. A light bulb had been inserted into her uterus.
Okay.
Now, when they went to remove it, they were able to do so, and they recovered it completely intact.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. How?
A glass light bulb.
Yes. He managed to insert it.
Was it like the tube? Ceiling light?
No, it was more like a slightly more standard like household light bulb.
Yeah.
But it was a slightly irregular shape.
Was it like the candle light bulbs?
What the fuck's a candle light bulb?
You're taking the piss. It's a bulb and it looks like a candle light. Like the flame off a candle.
Like the type that's in a chandelier or...
What?
You know when you get like... Not like obviously an old school chandelier with candles, but they get like remakes and they'll have like a light bulb in it, but it's like a flame. Is that what you're on about?
What? No. Like, they go in lamps and... I think they have them in, like, sconces, even. I'm fairly certain they're called candle light bulbs.
Okay, well, I don't know what the fuck you're on about. But no,
it's like a standard light bulb, but it's narrower and it has a point.
No, as far as I'm aware, it was a light bulb, but instead of being more bulbous at the top, it was just a more elongated strip shape.
So it could be a candlelight bulb.
It could be, but it did not say that.
Okay. Not really important.
No, that
was... The fact that they managed to pull it out intact.
Yeah, that's the thing to more focus on here.
I'm sorry, but I just think it's baffling, but you don't know or heard of a candlelight bulb.
I'm very sorry. 18th of January, 1990. Darla Jane Ferguson was found in Riverside. She was also only 23 years old and her cause of death was strangulation. There was trauma to the head and her legs had been propped up and the top half of her body was covered with a bin bag. Her wrists had been bound and her body was found only half a mile away from where Kimberly Little had been found.
And his position in him?
Yes, with Darla Jane Ferguson, her body had been positioned.
And when they position them, they always say that's a sign of disrespect.
Usually, yeah. Like something like when they have their legs left splayed open or something, yeah. You know. 9th of February, 1990, Carol Lynn Miller's body was found in an orchard. Now, Carol was 35 and she had been smothered to death. She was found with just a t-shirt on, which had also been pulled up over her head. Injuries that she had sustained indicated that there was, in fact, a struggle.
Well, check under her nails.
Yeah, it's always a big one.
Check under them fucking nails. Claw his fucking face off.
Yeah, right. I'd be like swinging like fuck, scratching like fuck if it was me.
That's what they say, don't they? They say, in case of survival, try and memorize as much as you can around you.
Yeah.
Facial features on him and stuff.
And have the tracker on your phone.
And put get as much DNA on you as possible. Yeah.
Do you know what the scary thing is?
Mm-hmm.
When a woman says, like, I try to leave my DNA in case I get caught, it's a very different image to a man leaving his DNA everywhere, isn't it? She had been stabbed 5 times prior to death. And next to her body, there was the discarded peel of a grapefruit.
What? So
they were in an orchard.
So he took a snack.
He had stopped for a little sneaky snack, yeah.
And next to her body?
Yes, and just threw the peel down. 6th of November, 1990. Cheryl Coker was found in Riverside. She was 33 years of age, and her cause of death was strangulation. And they were able to tell that something had been used to strangle her, as there was enough force to actually cut into her skin. As well as that, her right breast had been removed after her death. And her breast was found approximately 30 feet from her body.
Well, so he just lobbed it? I don't mean lobbed it off, I mean threw it,
from the sounds of it. And again, remember for later, shoe prints were found at the scene. 21st of December, 1990. Susan Melissa Sternfeld was found in Riverside. Her body was left beside a dumpster. She was 27 years old and again strangled to death. Her body had been left nude and posed.
So with the strangulation, are they getting fingerprints or anything off the neck or?
They didn't say anything about
that. Was it a ligature?
Well, they specifically stated in one that it looked as though he had used something.
Yeah.
Because of the force. So I'm guessing the rest of the time it was manual strangulation.
Okay.
19th of January, 1991. Kathleen Leslie Milne was discovered near Lake Elsinore. She was 42. Strangulation as well as asphyxiation was listed as her cause of death. Now, a white sock was found lodged in the back of her throat. So I'm guessing that's where the asphyxiation came in. Yeah. He'd used something to choke her, but then also had strangled her.
Okay, now.
She was nude, but had been laid on top of a red robe.
Her red robe?
It didn't say. It just said, a red robe. I don't know if he took it with him. 4th of July, 1991. Sherry Ann Latham was found in Lake Elsinore. Sherry was 37 and she had died from strangulation. She was left nude and laid face down. Now, unfortunately, there's not a lot of information they could gain due to the state of decomposition. 16th of August, 1991. Kelly Marie Hammond was found in Corona. Kelly was 27 and her cause of death was strangulation as well as opiate intoxication as a contributing factor. She had two cuts to her forehead which were inflicted after death. And her body had been posed as well.
What, so the cuts in her forehead, is it like drag marks?
I don't know. It didn't state what it was from. When I read it, I took it as like two slits, like he'd cut her.
He could have been trying to make a mark.
Possibly, yeah. Her right arm was bent and placed underneath her abdomen. Her left arm was bent with her hand on the ground and palm facing upward. Her left leg was up towards her chest and her right leg was extended outward. 13th of September, 1991. Catherine MacDonald was found in Lake Elsinore. She was 30 years old. Cause of death was stabbing as well as compression to the neck. Her right breast was also removed. And same as some previous victims, her body had been posed.
So it's all the ones is cut the breast off. Apart from one, the breast is gone. The breast is missing.
Yeah.
So he's dropped it then?
I assume so, yeah.
So he's taking it as a trophy.
There's a little bit about that afterwards.
Oh, okay.
To do with the breasts, but, we'll get into it. Now, for how Catherine's body was posed, her arms were positioned up above her head. Her legs were spread apart, but her feet were put together. Again, shoe prints were found.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing about this particular murder, there had been a news broadcast about these murders. Okay?
Okay.
And during the segment, they said that all of his victims so far had been Caucasian. But Catherine was African American. So this led investigators to believe that doing so, or, choosing this particular victim.
He was pissed.
Yes. Exactly. And it was his way of telling that he's the one in control.
Yeah.
Don't get too comfortable thinking this is who I am. Now, after Catherine had been found, investigators went to her home. Obviously, they need to break the news to her family. So when they got to her home, they said they just kind of knew something's wrong. Something was off.
Yeah.
So they entered the home, and when they got into the home, they didn't find any family members other than a young child. And it was Catherine's daughter, and she had been left in the home on her own since her mother's abduction.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, it's a horrific part of the story. Can you imagine how terrified that little girl must have been? Yeah.
Well, you say terrified, but you, because they don't know.
Mm.
Like,
I know what you mean. Like, could she have been none the wiser?
Yeah.
But when I was watching an interview with one of the detectives, he seemed as if, like, maybe it was just his personal feelings about it, but he seemed really like Jesus.
Because if I was a little kid and I was on my own, I'll play with my toys.
That's grand. I'll go into the cupboard and get some Pop-Tarts now.
I'll have a nap.
Yeah. 30th of October, 1991. Delilah Samora's body was found in Glenavon. Delilah was 35 years old and her cause of death was strangulation. Her larynx was crushed, so an extremely aggressive attack. And that just shows how much force was used.
Yeah.
Her fingernails were damaged, indicating that there had been a struggle.
Again, get that fucking DNA under there.
That's it. 23rd of December, 1991. Eleanor Casares was found in an orange grove in Riverside. She was 39 years old and her cause of death was stabbing and strangulation. Stab wounds were found to the chest and her right breast had been removed. Now, Neil, that is quite a few victims I have just listed.
Yeah.
All of these women, they were just the ones he was convicted of.
Oh, so there's more.
He's suspected of many more. Now, he was charged with another murder, and that was the murder of Sherry Michelle Pazer. On the 27th of April, 1991, Sherry's body was found in a flower bed behind a bowling alley in Riverside. She was 24, and it's not certain what her cause of death was, but it's thought it was suffocation. There was trauma to her face, and a shoe print was found on her lower back. Piece of fucking shit.
Yeah.
Stomping on a fucking victim, like. She had been left nude, but the person that had actually found her, they had covered her with their jacket before calling the police.
Like,
it was a very sweet thing to do.
You think you're showing respect, but yeah, you've just soiled the crime scene.
So results from semen found were inconclusive, but they could not exclude William Suff. So Suff was charged with her murder, but unfortunately the jury was deadlocked and he did not receive a further conviction. So, as for the murders he was suspected of, 29th of October 1986, 23-year-old Michelle Yvette Gutierrez, her body was found in an industrial estate. A man was walking through collecting cans when he spotted the body of a young woman left in a drainage ditch. Multiple stab wounds to her face, chest and buttocks. Mutilation of her genitals, and her cause of death is unknown.
Oh, because it decom.
Yeah. 11th of December, 1986. 24-year-old Charlotte Jean Palmer. Her body was found near the highway. I mean, unfortunately, her body was too badly decomposed to accurately gauge her cause of death. So it's uncertain, but they think possibly that she had been smothered.
Okay.
29th of April, 1988. 37-year-old Linda Ann Ortega. Linda was found nude and her body had been mutilated. Her cause of death, stabbing.
So still at this point, they're all Caucasian except one?
Yeah, as far as I know, yeah.
Okay.
2nd of May, 1988. 27-year-old Martha Bess Young. Martha was found not far from where Linda's body was found and she was nude and her legs had been left spread open. Cause of death, strangulation, as well as an overdose on amphetamines. 27th of January 1989. 37-year-old Linda May Ruiz. She was found on the beach. Her head had been buried in the sand, and there was sand also found in her throat. Cause of death, asphyxiation.
Fucking hell.
11th of November 1989. 36-year-old Judy Lynn Angel. Her body had been mutilated, and her cause of death, blunt force trauma. Now, that's his list of victims and list of suspected victims.
A fair few, then.
A fair fucking few, Neil. So, now that we've gone through the victims, let's take a quick look at William Suff.
Bit of a lad, is he?
Well, like we said at the start of the episode, there's not a huge amount known on him, but here's what I could find. So, he was born William Lester Suff on the 20th of August 1950 in California. He was described as friendly and helpful by neighbours. He was also said to be a model worker.
I hate this fucking shit. I think I've said this before. Like, so you find out your co-worker is a serial killer.
It's happened to us all.
The news crew show up to interview you and they're like, so you worked with this man. Would you ever have suspected anything? I was an hard worker.
Salt of the earth.
Did he ever show signs of aggression? What was he like with female staff?
Yeah.
I don't give a shit how many trucks he loaded in a day or worked through his lunch break.
Yeah,
tossers.
He was also said to have been a great cook, Neil.
I couldn't give a shit. Is that what you're going to say he did with the right tit?
His signature dish was chili, and he would often bring that to the office picnics. And yes.
Fuck off.
I don't know if there's anything to say for certain, but it was rumoured and it was talked about that he was possibly, you know.
That sounds like someone's trying to Hollywood it.
Yeah, it does sound a bit like.
But then
know.
Again, did they ever find the tits he'd cut off?
Well, this is it, isn't it? I think it's, right, it's the chili thing. The whole ground up meat thing.
Didn't they do that in South Park? Cartman killed someone's parents and put them in a chili and fed it to them?
I don't know. Now, in 1974, while living in Texas with his then wife, both he and his wife were convicted of beating their 2-month-old child to death. Yeah.
So what were you doing out?
Well, I'll tell you. So his wife's conviction was later overturned over insufficient evidence. William was sentenced to 70 years for the murder of his 2-month-old daughter. But he would only serve 10 years before he was released on parole in 1984.
They paroled someone who killed a fucking baby.
Beat to death a 2-month-old. 10 years he got.
That's fucking...
It's insane.
I'm speechless. Like,
yeah, you can't spec. You've already covered William Speck.
Done that.
You still can't spec.
That's insane.
It's crazy. 2-month-old. You know what I mean? Now...
What do you get? Fucking self-defense?
So, as for the victims in, you know, the more recent years, you know, not his 2-month-old daughter.
Yeah.
He seemed to be targeting sex workers or people who had substance abuse issues. It's a very common thing you see. It's as if they think, you know, I can get away with this better. It has been...
No one gives a shit about him.
Yes, it has been kind of as if that's the thought process. And at times, you know, law enforcement have kind of dropped the ball a bit because it's the kind of notion they have of, oh, it's a higher risk lifestyle. And it's like, nah, fuck off. So during the investigation, obviously, they were getting desperate to catch this guy. So in March 1991, a task force was put together to finally take down the killer. A friend of Kelly Hammond was able to provide the police with a description of the suspect, his vehicle, and she also worked with a forensic artist to provide a composition sketch. Now, this was all vital information.
Yeah. Because at this point, they've got nothing. Well, they've got a fibre.
Yeah, they did have a few points. They had the shoe prints that were left at multiple scenes.
Yeah.
They also had cat hairs from a tan cat that were found. So, you know, obviously they're like, oh, this guy is a cat.
Yeah.
It's an easy conclusion to jump to. They also knew he drove a van. Red fibres found at the scene. And thanks to the information given by Kelly Hammond's friend, they knew that there was a red sleeping bag in the back of his van.
See, the red fibres rings a bell. But I might be getting that mixed up with another case. It was someone on forensic files. It weren't a van, it was a car. And the fibres were a carpet from the car.
Yeah, I think the case you're thinking of is Bobby Joe Long.
Was that blue fibres?
It was the carpet in his car. Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah.
It was one of his victims had been blindfolded and she was able to peep underneath and give them the description.
One where nearly every single victim, there was blue or red fibres.
Oh yeah, no, this guy had like a list of victims, but I think it was his last victim, or at least just... she was very lucky to have escaped. She literally was...
Someone who like prowled a certain strip?
Yes, I think that's what his deal was.
Yeah.
Big bastard. So Detective Bob Creed, he was extremely invested in this case. He actually knew two of the victims. Now, the scene where Carol Miller had been left, Detective Bob Creed knew the area. His dad had grown up there and he had played there as a kid himself. So, you know, at this point, it's thought it was becoming personal.
Yeah.
The killer was trying to mess with him. He also said that every family he met were great, loving families. They all loved their daughters and they all provided for them. And I think that's important to note because it's something that seems to get forgotten about. People don't think that in the case when a person is involved in sex work, that they necessarily have a good family background. Yeah. Like we were talking about earlier, it's kind of like, oh, they won't be missed or something. It's not always true. So during the investigation, a tip came in from Wisconsin. An inmate said that he had actually talked to the Riverside killer. The man he talked to said that he had killed Carol Miller, and the inmate said that the killer told him that he had stabbed her 5 times and that he had ate a grapefruit and threw the peel onto her body.
And they want to release that.
Exactly. So they're like, shit, we need to get over there and talk to this guy.
Yeah.
Now, it was a dead lead. It wasn't the killer that this guy had talked to.
How did they know about the grapefruit? And
so the inmate was using this information to get a deal. And when they went to the guy who supposedly said this, he told them that he had been married to Carol. But the thing was, the marriage had been kept a secret, so her family didn't know. Everyone thought she was single, including the detective.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And the reason this man had the information, he had contacted the coroner's office when he'd heard about Carol's murder, and they'd sent him their report. So that's how he had the info.
Okay.
So imagine the frustration the detectives must have been feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
And to add salt to the wound, Neil, while they were away investigating this, the newspapers ran an article that said the detectives were out of the area investigating. And that night, the killer struck again in Riverside. Now, why the fuck did you run that article?
Like, I know journalists are protected in certain ways, but at what point can police be like, no, fuck that?
Yeah. Can you be considered somewhat complicit in the murder?
Yeah.
Like, you're essentially feeding them information to make their killings, their whatever, easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Now, on the 9th of January, 1992, William Suff was pulled over by a police officer. He had spotted a van that matched the description. He had also recognised the driver from the sketch of the suspect.
Shoot him.
When When the officer looked in his van, he saw items relating to the murders, including the red sleeping bag that they had been told about.
Shoot him. Definitely shoot him.
Suff was then arrested. Now, when Detective Bob Creed saw who the killer was, he could not believe it. William Suff worked for the county. He had delivered furniture to the office that the detectives had been working in.
So he'd been seeing the board.
He was there. He was overhearing the information on the case. He was there the whole time.
Fucking hell.
Can you imagine being the detective, seeing him? You'd be like, that fucking piece of shit.
Yeah. But then again, do you know, even if you're delivering to that building, you shouldn't have evidence and shit up. Like, I don't know. Like, you wouldn't expect it, but I don't think you should have anything out on display for someone who's not a detective to come in and see it.
Yeah.
But fuck.
So when Detective Bob Creed went to Suff's residence, he was greeted at the door by a young woman, about 18 years of age, who was Suff's wife.
18?
Yeah. Little bit of an age gap. So as he stood in the home of William Suff talking to his wife, he started to notice a few things. Their pet cat, tan in colour, a pair of shoes, the same shoes that matched the imprints found at the scene. At one point he looked up and he noticed the light, the same unusual shaped light bulb that had been used to violate one of his victims.
Fucking hell.
While talking to Suff's wife, she mentioned that she works nights, and that was something that they had previously discussed. If his partner worked nights, it would give him a chance, an opportunity to go out and commit these crimes.
Yeah.
He noticed spare tires at the home, and his wife then told the detective that he's always changing his tires and always working on that van.
Oh, so between killings, he was constantly changing his tires. Yes,
exactly. He's a slippery fuck.
Well, not enough to get rid of cat, get rid of shoes.
You can't just be getting rid of your cat, Neil. Even William Suff likes a companion. So, Suff's trial began in 1995. William Suff's lawyers described him as an easygoing man who was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Fucking, like...
I know, come on. Come on, lads. Model worker.
Don't.
The defense argued that this case was largely based on circumstantial evidence and it was flimsy at best.
Circumstantial? Circumstantial?
Yeah.
Hang on a minute. No, what do you mean circumstantial?
Well, if you look at a lot of the stuff, it's like, oh, the shoe prints are the same. Oh, the cat hairs. You know, technically, yeah.
One of them would be circumstantial.
Well, here's the thing.
It's more than a fucking coincidence, Megan.
You're not having it, are you?
No.
No, but there wasn't like...
I said it as a joke before. After hearing that, shoot him.
So you're going for the death penalty here, are you?
I wouldn't waste US citizens' taxpayers' money on whatever they inject him with or electricity. Shoot him.
Right, well, I know you're upset about the circumstantial evidence. But here's where it starts to close in a bit. More than 30 witnesses took the stand during his trial. Included in these witnesses was a woman by the name of Rhonda Jetmore. Now, Rhonda was the first in his series of attacks, but she survived.
So are the defense going to say it's hearsay?
I'm sure they probably did. So Rhonda was a sex worker who had met Suff in January 89 in Lake Elsinore. They agreed on a price and they entered a nearby house that had been abandoned. Once inside, Suff produced a $1 bill. But before Rhonda got a chance to, you know, challenge him on this, he became violent. Rhonda described how he wrapped his hands around her throat, pressing his thumbs down so hard she knew she was going to pass out.
Bit of a comedian pulling the $1 bill out.
I mean, could you imagine? Like the fuck you are, $1? So yeah, she described how she felt him pressing down onto her neck. She knew she was going to pass out. But before that could happen, Rhonda hit him over the head with a flashlight.
Good lass.
She also bit down on his finger so hard that she actually broke a tooth.
Fucking hell.
Good woman, though. I'm getting the job done.
Yeah.
And as Suf stopped to look for his glasses, she was able to make her escape. So, during the trial, Rhonda looked at Suf and stated, "That is the man who attacked me." "Is there any doubt in your mind?" asked the district attorney. "None whatsoever," Rhonda replied. "That's him. I'll never forget that face." So we're getting a bit of a, you know, like remember Cora in the Richard Speck case?
Yeah.
That man.
Yeah.
Good woman. So while she's saying all this and a little bit of back and forth, and she's like, "I'll never forget him," he wouldn't even look up at her.
They usually don't.
Little puss. Same thing during the victim impact statement. Suf wouldn't even bat an eyelid. He wouldn't give them any attention. William Suf was convicted of 12 counts of first-degree murder and the attempted murder of Rhonda Jetmore. After just 10 minutes of deliberation, the jury recommended the death penalty. And with that, William Suf was sentenced to death. And he remains on death row still to this day.
Why is it takes so long when they're on death row? Is it because of them appealing?
Yeah, I can't say for sure. I don't know the ins and outs of it. But yeah, I'm guessing it's to do with how many appeals there is. Or, you know, maybe if they're trying for a retrial or something.
That'd be an appeal, wouldn't it?
Well, you could be appealing the death penalty or you could be trying to get a new trial.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So something about this case that I just couldn't wrap my head around with how many victims there were and the brutality of his crimes is, how is this case not more well known?
You're going to tell me there was another case?
Exactly.
At the same time.
So the reason being was that this trial took place around the same time as the O.J. Simpson trial. And it just got completely overshadowed in the media. Also, a contributing factor was that the fact his victims were sex workers, they often got pushed aside as their job is considered high risk, like we said earlier. But I have to...
So as an F1 driver.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't give a fuck what your job is. A person's a person.
Yeah.
You know?
So does that mean someone in the army? Someone signs up for the army?
Exactly. We just don't give a fuck because they're taking a chance and they're putting their life on the line or something, which a sex worker shouldn't even be considered putting their life on the line. They're providing a fucking service.
Yeah.
You know.
I honestly think, because they're never going to stop sex workers. It's never going to happen. At some point, they are going to have to start bringing them indoors, making it legal.
Yes. Provide a safe environment for these women to work.
It's like, look at the difference between porn industry and OnlyFans.
Yeah, there's so much more control for people now.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, I have to say, Detective Bob Creed did seem to really care, and he was trying really hard to bring justice to these victims.
Oh yeah, because you said he knew two of them.
He did, yeah. Like, when I was watching him being interviewed, he did seem as though, like, you know, like I said, he took it personal. He did care. He didn't see them as any different to the next person, which obviously he fucking shouldn't. In an interview with the Bay City News, Creed said, "We don't care if they're drug addicts or prostitutes. They're getting the same resource levels as if they were cheerleaders." That's exactly it, isn't it?
Yeah.
A person's a person.
Yep.
Repeat after me. So that's the case of William Suf, the Riverside Killer. Quite a lot of victims, and so shocking how lesser known this case is.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Fuck. I just want to issue an apology in case it's polluted the audio. There was an alarm going off. It goes off near enough every single day. If it's ruined the episode, I apologise. I'll try and do my best to edit it out. So with that, we'll move on to today's oddity.
So, for the oddity today, got one for you. The butt slasher.
What?
The Butt Slasher.
Okay. I'm not looking forward.
So there was this guy. I feel like you're upset every time I start a sentence like that. You don't really know where it's going to go.
No.
So yeah, there was this guy and he would go around shopping centres in Virginia and slash the arses of young women.
What do you mean, slash their ass?
He would go up to a woman and just like, with a knife, just quick slash.
I've had that done to me.
Yes.
Not on my ass.
No.
And it went by...
Across your calf, wasn't it?
No.
I thought it was your calf.
I think I fucking noticed him do it to my calf. Did it to me thigh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Calf's a fucking bit lower than a thigh. Basically, right. So I don't know if this was a worldwide thing or I don't even know if it was a nationwide thing. But when I lived in Sheffield and I was in Sheffield City Centre and apparently this was a phase of random attacks and I was one of the victims. So basically there was me and my friend, we was at a zebra crossing and as we walked over, you know, because it's in the middle of a city centre, so it were shitloads of people about on this crossing. That's where we think it happened because we'd got multiple people coming toward.
Back and forth.
Yeah. And I'd say it was about, I don't know, about 2 minutes later, I just suddenly felt like my leg was wet. Like my trousers was wet. And I looked down and my tracky bottoms were completely slit.
Tracky bottoms.
Well, I was about fucking 13, 14.
Okay, yeah. What are you saying? You still wear tracky bottoms?
So I looked down and my trousers were slit. And when they'd looked at it, they said they'd use a craft knife.
You know,
like
say that.
Like a fucking scalpel.
Yeah, they do say that, like, if it's a really sharp blade, you don't necessarily feel it. Like in the...
I don't feel a thing.
You know, the Magic Tricks episode, when we were talking about the guy who was swallowing blades. Yeah. I said, would he have necessarily noticed straight away if it's that sharp?
Yeah.
Which you've just said, you didn't notice straight away.
Yeah, but that was slitting my fucking leg, not swallowing a chunk of metal.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake. Yeah, so I've still got a scar to this day to tell the story.
It's so fucked up. Like, you were a kid.
Oh, like, my generation.
Talking about...
Right, so I don't want to sound like... I don't want to...
Back in day.
No. I don't want to sound like my generation was the worst for the stuff we had to go through because people in the 70s in California with the fucking serial killers.
Yeah.
You know, but we went through that. And the other one that I can remember is happy slapping.
Yeah, I don't...
You'd just go up to random people in the street while your mates were recording on the phone and slap them across the face.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Like, and I've seen videos where it was done to, like, old ladies on a bus.
No, that's fucking wrong.
Yeah.
That's right. Like, what happened to you and this happy slapping bollocksology? The Butt Slasher. Do you remember the ponytail snatcher guy?
Yeah.
All of that shit is like, you know, it's not going to have lifelong physical effects on you, but the mental trauma it can cause from, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
When you're just out in your own world and someone does that shit.
Yeah.
Fucking mental. So yeah, the Butt Slasher. Like I said, he would go around shopping centres in Virginia and slash the arses of young women. Now, he would walk up close to a woman that he had selected, quickly cut them with a knife and then just disappear. He was the great Butt Slasher. Do you like that?
For what, though?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of, like, thrill or whatever he got out of it. So, the Butt Slasher, also known as Johnny B. Guillen, fled to Peru.
Guillen. Oh, okay.
Guillen! He fled to Peru, but was extradited back to the US and was convicted of 2 counts of malicious wounding and unlawful wounding. He was suspected of 9 attacks, but as part of a plea deal, only pled guilty to 4. He received a 7-year sentence.
Oh, So I'm not saying what he did wasn't bad, and he got 7 years.
Yeah.
Whereas a bloke beats to death a 2-year-old and got 10. Well, he served 10.
Yeah. I don't give a fuck about good behaviour or any of that. Like, no. Come on. When it's a violent crime like that, no.
It's fucked. The justice system is just... It's a joke.
It's gone to the dogs.
It fucking... It's went. It's gone. It's
been gone. So, luckily, none of the injuries were serious, although one woman was left with permanent scarring. And to this day, Neil, his motive is still unknown.
Because he wouldn't have had one.
What do you mean? He has to have, like, some reason for doing it.
Well, he was obviously just mad, isn't he?
I sit in my ass all day and eat crisps because they taste good. That's my motive. They taste good. I don't know. It must have been some type of a thrill. I don't know. I don't know if it was a sexual thing or what. Like, what?
I don't know.
It's the fact that he did it and it disappeared.
Don't they say when it's like sexual, they'll use a knife to replicate the dick?
They might say that.
They do. I'm sure I've heard that before. Because of the motion of stabbing, they think penetration of the knife.
Oh, yeah. Could be. But this was a slit.
It's instead of slapping your dick across the
fuck's sake.
I don't know. You're asking me to get I'm into the mind of a madman.
The butt slasher, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to, though. You know. I'm not asking you to go around doing this.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't. What do you think I'm going to go around slapping my lad around on?
Knife.
Oh.
See, you've twisted it now in some sick, sexual, sadistic bastard. But yeah, no, that's the case of the butt slasher. I thought it was a, like, obviously it's still horrible to have happened to these women, but I thought it was a slightly lesser serious one than the murderous bastard William Suff. I hope you enjoyed the episode.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.